everyone. I'm honored to be filling in today for Kate Madigan of the Michigan Climate Action Network on the Speaking of Resilience podcast. My name is Ashley Sotishek, and I'm the program manager of the Great Lakes Business Network with Groundwork Center for Resilient Communities. I'm thrilled to be speaking this afternoon with Laura Schmidt, co-founder of the Good Grief Network, a nonprofit organization that creates community space to process the often painful feelings and realities of our time and to help participants orient their lives toward meaningful action. Many come into these spaces to process climate grief and eco-anxiety. So to help connect people and to heal, the Good Grief Network uses a unique 10-step program modeled after other 12-step programs like Alcoholics Anonymous. Laura is a native of Michigan and has been studying personal resilience strategies for nearly a decade. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Biology, Environmental Studies, and Religion from Central Michigan University and holds a Master of Science degree in Environmental Humanities from the University of Utah. She is trained in nonviolent civil disobedience and is the granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor. However, I should note that I actually know Laura from her days as the communications director for a small grassroots policy shop in Salt Lake City called Heal Utah. It was there that we shared a tiny desk space and worked together to advance clean air and renewable energy solutions. So welcome, Laura. We've come a long way since those days. Right. Well, hi, everyone. I'm honored to be filling in this afternoon for Kate Madigan of the Michigan Climate Action Network on the Speaking of Resilience podcast. My name is Ashley Sotishek, and I may be filling in occasionally and am the program manager of the Great Lakes Business Network with Groundwork Center for Resilient Communities. I'm really excited to be chatting with Laura Schmidt this afternoon, and we'll hear a little bit more about her. So Laura, I'm eager and excited to welcome you to the Speaking of Resilience podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Ashley.
Great. Well, first I want to dive in to a little bit more about what inspired you to form the Good Grief Network and what need in society your network works to address.
Yeah, it's a great question. So first of all, we should announce to the listeners that we actually know each other and have a bit of history. And part of it is because when we were working together was when I was forming the Good Grief Network. And so you kind of got to see an insider's perspective. But it all started a little bit before that when I was in my graduate degree, working on my graduate degree at the University of Utah. And I was really focusing on personal resilience strategies because I have clinical depression and clinical anxiety, and I'm a change maker, and I want to work on climate change mitigation. And so I realized that if I want to be in it for the long haul and I want to learn how to sustain myself, that I needed to figure out tools and techniques to kind of protect myself and to make sure that I wasn't burning myself out and that I could continue to be a change maker over time. And after I did the research for my graduate work, I got a job at a small nonprofit in Utah and did some, I wasn't working on policy, but our nonprofit worked on policy. And I saw really, really great policy work not going through. And then I also realized that we didn't create a lot of time to mourn the loss of the hard work that you and others were doing at our little nonprofit. And I realized if we're really going to be in it in the long haul, and we're going to have some defeats, because to be an activist or to be an advocate means that we're always the underdog and you're always fighting for change, that we need to create some space for grief and for mourning and for the letdowns that happen along the way. And I think that actually makes us stronger and more resilient. So the work that I do now creates a lot of space for grief, anger, rage, despair. And unlike most of the spaces that I find myself in, we find these to be really productive feelings and that we don't get stuck there, that once we can move them, once we can face them, that we actually become stronger and more resilient. And we can talk a little bit more about this moving forward.
Yeah, well, that sounds great, Laura. I mean, it's definitely not an easy job to be an advocate all the time. It's definitely can be rife with challenges. So I want to dig a little bit more into the meat of what Good Grief Network does. So your website says that they use peer-to-peer based support groups Just wondering if you can explain to our listeners a little bit more about how exactly the program works.
Yeah. So we have a 10-step program. We meet for 10 weeks. We do one step a week. The overall structure is based on something like Alcoholics Anonymous or Adult Children of Alcoholics. It's the same type of meetings. Again, it's a step-based program. And what we do is we meet in small groups. So we usually cap our groups at about 15 people. And we explore different topics. So the steps, we could go through that a little bit later, basically make us focus on doing a lot of inner work so that as we come together and we do our inner work, we become more resilient to do the outer work, to be advocates and activists in our own meaningful ways. And what we do is, it's not a therapy program, which is why we definitely show that we're a peer-to-peer support network, is we as facilitators show that we're in it with you. We're in it with the participants. We too are experiencing grief or eco-anxiety or some despair. But the point is that we're willing to lean in and kind of explore those feelings. We don't stop and say, oh, that's too scary. We can't go there. Instead, we look at it and see why we feel the grief, why we feel despair. And then in community, we find the support to be able to process it. And then by step 10, we focus on what meaningful effort is. And so we in the program and in Good Grief Network talk about the intersection of where our passions meet our skill sets and our experience. And we think that's kind of your superpower. That's going to be the place where you have the most amount of energy to put towards a cause. And so we try to help everybody find that really pivotal intersection so that you can maintain your resilience as you continue to do the outward work in the world that needs to be done.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're really helping people to kind of channel that those initial feelings of despair then into something much more impactful in the long run. So, you know, knowing that you're a brilliant activist, I'm assuming though that you didn't come up with all of this on your own. I'm wondering kind of who are your most influential teachers or mentors in this space, and why did they have a big impact on your life and your work?
Yeah, I'm just one of the co-founders. My wife is the other co-founder. And between the two of us, we talk often about how we stand on the shoulders of giants. And you're exactly right, Ashley. We didn't create this on our own. We read a lot. We study. We look to our other mentors and teachers for how to be alive in these times and not burn ourselves out. And so I've been really fortunate to work with Terry Tempest Williams. She was actually an instructor at the University of Utah when I was a student there. And she is a profound individual. She just, the way that she facilitates is very fierce, and she creates a lot of openings. And so I feel like anytime you sit with Terry, you look at the world differently than the 2 hours prior before you sat with her. But we've also been mentored by Joanna Macy, who created the work that Reconnects. She wrote a book called Active Hope, which is also fulfilled with resilient strategies for these times. And then I've also been reading people like Frances Weller, who talks about grief and the importance of bringing grief rituals back into the Western paradigms. And then people like Adrienne Marie Brown, who talk about pleasure and emergent strategy and how if we really want to create a movement, we have to figure out things that bring us joy and bring us alive. Like, we can't just fight for things that make us miserable all the time. Otherwise, it's not worth fighting for. And a couple other people that have been really profound on this journey have been Suzanne Moser. She's a social science researcher, and she contributed to the IPCC. And she wrote a chapter called Getting Real About It, about how we have to start looking at our internal feelings. You know, climate change is here. We've seen its impacts. We've seen the fires. And to not honor the grief that comes along with that prevents us from really being actionable in this time. It prevents us from even being fully alive. We know from social science research that if we mute things like grief and rage and despair, that it actually mutes the feelings that we want to feel, like joy and vitality and meaning and all these things that we like always want to gravitate towards. And so there's a big movement to embrace the whole spectrum of feelings, even if the ones like grief and rage are unpleasant and painful. Our main message at Good Grief Network is like, it doesn't stop there. You don't get stuck there. It's feelings are a teacher and they're a motivator and they're there to instruct you on something. So once you can lean in and feel those, then you open to more joy, more connectivity, and more meaning in the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. Well, it's so inspiring how you're able to take that and move to a much more positive place ultimately. So I want to move on and talk a little bit more about the network. It started, you know, really small. I remember some of the first meetings in Salt Lake City. But now you've got members located all around the world in a number of different countries. And so I'm wondering what lessons you've taken away from being able to be, you know, such an empowering leader in this shared global experience.
Yeah, it did start so small. In fact, I think we thought it would stay in Salt Lake City. And then everybody kept saying that the participants who joined us kept saying how valuable it was to them and that we should bring it out more and more people want to be relating to each other in these ways. And so now I live in Western Nebraska and I work on this initiative full time. And since then, we have moved into the digital realms. We were doing in-person meetings and digital. And then coronavirus, of course, made all of us stay at home. And so we've been able to connect with people all over the world. I've been able to sit in circle with people from Australia and New Zealand and South Africa, all over Europe, South America. And what is really beautiful is, one, in the last year, we get to hear about what coronavirus and the pandemic is like in their country. And I think that, you know, coronavirus and climate have a lot in common. And I think what's important to note is that we're all really interrelated. We're all connected. And to see how we can communicate our fears and our desires and how to make a movement and how to make change is really important. And if you can get diverse perspectives from people all over the world, then that enhances your perspectives and you can bring that back to your local community and maybe try new ideas that you haven't had access to before. So I think that there's tremendous strength and diversity of voices and perspectives and ways of being.
Absolutely. Well, and can you tell us a little bit more about where your groups are located and kind of how many you have so far? Because it's really budded in, you know, in quite an incredible way.
Yeah, we do two different types of facilitation. So Good Grief Network facilitates, and we have facilitators in six different countries. And so we're always kind of mixing our facilitators up. So we might have one from the US and one from South Africa and one from Australia, or one from Ireland and one from the US and one from Canada. That's just from the organizational perspective or the organization's perspective. We also have what we call affiliate groups. And this is for people who, like you, Ashley, maybe you want to go and facilitate for your community in Michigan. Maybe you want to do it for a book club or a church group or something like that. And so these groups are made to be autonomous. Like there's not much oversight from Good Grief Network because you know your community better than we do. And so you would download our information and you'd bring it back to your group. And so between our groups and those groups, we have in the past 2 or 3 years had something like 50 different groups running between GGN groups and the affiliate groups.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, and it probably allows people to have this really, you know, hyper-local almost approach then that they're able to take.
Yeah. It allows them to relate with each other in a way that maybe they haven't before, because we talk a lot about feelings. You know, each step is different. And one of the steps is about being with uncertainty. And so when you bring it to the hyper-local, it's like, what does this mean in my life? You know, how do I live with uncertainty? What does do inner work mean? How do I understand what it means to take breaks and rest?
Yeah, since you've brought that up, can you describe the steps for our listeners?
Yeah. I certainly can. So again, they're one step a week. You start with the first one, which is the hardest, and that's accept the severity of the predicament. And what we like to do in our spaces is not kind of fight or argue about how severe we think the predicament is. Instead, we hold that space for the emotional reaction to our perceived notion of how severe the predicament is. And so we can sit with a lot of different types of people. Some people think that, you know, humans might go extinct in this next generation. Some people think that we're really close to a technological breakthrough that will allow us to survive and thrive. And our groups can sit with the whole range of feelings and people and types of perception. But the goal here is to say, like, I'm a little worried about what we're facing. You know, like climate change is a really scary topic that seems so almost insurmountable. And we just hold that space without rushing to solve. Then we move into being with uncertainty. We, especially in the Western cultures, are not very good with being with uncertainty. We spend our whole lives trying to get schooling and then the job and then the retirement, and we kind of have our lives foretold for many of us. And so the notion that we're facing an uncertain future with more storms, more vector-borne illnesses, water shortages, that can bring a lot of fear. But if we start inviting moving with uncertainty, then it makes us more nimble and resilient. Then we move into honor my mortality and the mortality of all. For many of us, it's been a really tough year. We've had a lot of deaths that we've seen because of coronavirus. And so if we can realize that we are human beings, we have a finite amount of life in us, then we can get busy living. We can get busy like relating to people and finding joy. Then we move into do inner work. And this is the feelings work. This is embracing those tough feelings along with the fun feelings. It's really about turning the work inward and doing some of the self work. Then we move into developing awareness of biases and perception. This is kind of how our brains trick us. So my wife and I call this step the permission to be wrong step. Like we have so many cognitive biases that kind of trick us or take shortcuts. So of course we're never always right. And I think that what we're trying to do here is bring in a sort of humility. Of course my perspective was wrong that time, but now I know better and now I'm doing better. The next one after that is to practice gratitude, appreciate beauty, and create connections. These three are resilient strategies available to us all the time, no matter what perspective we're in or what situation we're in. We can always practice gratitude, we can always find beauty, and we can always create more connections. And so we like to teach that no matter what you're going through, you can always have those available. And we talk about really honoring what's still here, because a lot of people that come into our spaces that are feeling climate grief or eco-anxiety are really focused on what we're losing and what's gone. And that's fair. We're losing a lot, or at least it feels like we're losing a lot. But this step is all about honoring what's still here and being present with what's still here. Then we move into taking breaks and rest. And as advocates and as activists, this is a really hard step for us because there's not time to waste, right? This is what we hear. And it's true, there's very little time to waste, but also if we're not caring for ourselves and taking breaks and resting, then we're doing ourselves a disservice and we're all going to burn out. And we're of no service if we're all burned out. Then after that, we move to another really hard step, which is grieve the harm I've caused. And it's talking about how we live in imperfect systems. And so, of course, we cause harm. You know, like I want to be a vegetarian, but I live in Western Nebraska and it's really hard to follow through with my values and my ethics because of where I live and the type of community I live in. And so how can we start to open up space for grieving and for cutting ourselves some slack for the impossible choices that we're often faced with instead of falling into guilt? And because we know guilt will shut us off from the work we need to do as well. So if we can honor the grief, if we can hold the fact that we do harm and that we're trying not to do harm in this, you know, in two hands, then maybe we can move forward and be action oriented. And then step nine is all about showing up. What does it mean for you to show up as an individual? What does it mean to show up in your community? And then the last step is reinvesting in meaningful efforts. And again, that gets back to the super PowerPoint of where your passions meet your experience and your skill set. So maybe, Ashley, what you're here to do is different than what I'm here to do. And that's great because we need people doing all different types of action. We need people doing really local action. We need people doing global action. We need people doing like county actions. You know, we need a whole breadth of actions. And so this step is focused on figuring out where your levers work. And that's the whole program.
That's beautiful. That's a really incredible lens to kind of, you know, really piece apart this big problem that eco-anxiety prevents for many of us in the activist community. And kind of, as you've said, you know, it's really not easy to keep up this fight. A lot of folks who are working, you know, to mitigate climate change, or other environmental issues really do have some dark and tired moments. And so I'm wondering what strategies you personally employ to avoid burnout, and where do you find your inspiration to keep on fighting?
I think it's important to note that there are a lot of intersections in the problems we're facing right now. The global collective that is, you know, like social injustice is right alongside the climate emergency, and we can't sort of parse them apart. They're intimately connected. And so what I do in times of burnout or times of overwhelming darkness is to connect, to reconnect, and to find people who care about these issues, because we're all over. You know, sitting with people worldwide, you know, there is a movement afoot, and that there are so many people that want change and they're ready to dig into change, that if you're feeling isolated, if you're feeling burned out, the single most important thing to do is to connect to other people and remember that you're not alone. And then there are other things that we can do to calm our nervous systems, because usually what's happening when we're leading to burnout is that we're feeling this overwhelm. We're feeling like maybe we don't know what work to be doing, or that our work's not good enough, or that there's too much work to do. And those all basically make our fear responses get kicked into high gear. And we're not very productive. We're not living very meaningfully if we're always reacting with our fear responses. So I personally, when I feel that overwhelm, that churning inside, I try to really slow down, and I try to spend some time out of doors. I live near a river, and so oftentimes we'll go and sit by the river or do a little walk by the river. I have some breathing exercises that I get back to, because what's happening is my body is feeling that overwhelm. And so we need to tap into the body to really calm that overwhelm. And then in addition to that, we live in a world where there's a 24-hour news cycle. And so anytime you hit your social media feeds, or you hit CNN, or however you get your news, it's probably going to overwhelm you, especially if you're already feeling that overwhelm. And so the other really easy technique that I use is to try to unplug, try to get off the screen, try to, again, connect with people around me that I love, try to connect with my pets. They're always present moment. If you have a dog or a cat, those animals live in the present moment. And then in addition to that, just shut your computer off, turn your phone off, take an hour break, and don't read the news for a little while. So those are some quick ways to calm your nervous system and kind of get out of that overwhelmed rut.
Yeah, it's definitely real to have this constant kind of drumbeat going on. It can certainly be overwhelming. I can very much relate. So in sort of that same vein, I guess, I'm wondering if you have one story that sticks out in your mind that's really inspired you to keep coming back to this work over the years.
So for me, throughout my life, I somehow got the notion that because I saw these problems coming, that somehow I was personally responsible for solving all of them. Like, all of that was on my shoulders.
It's a big and job.
I know, it's insane. And what I've noticed is not only is that a tremendous burden, but it's impractical. It's going to crush any of us. And a lot of the people who come into these spaces, a lot of these people who are experiencing eco-anxiety or climate grief, they too feel like they're solely responsible for solving the world's problems. And I think what's really beautiful and what's really keeps me motivated is that our 10-step program helps reframe this meaningful action into individualized action and individualized agency. So we no longer are carrying around this expectation that we as a single human being have to solve all the problems. But instead, it comes back to this notion that Ashley does a little bit, and then Laura does a little bit, and then this person does a little bit. And then what we can like get to collectively is so much bigger and so much broader than what we can do as any individuals. And so what keeps me going is community, is the notion that we're so much better connected. There's a proverb that says something like, a single stick breaks, but a bundle of sticks is unbreakable. And I think that that is the inspiration that comes from sitting in these spaces with other people who are motivated to make change. It's no longer on the individual. Instead, it's a collective. We're stronger and we're better together.
Right. Well, and you're creating this virtual space for people to really build that sense of community. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And the goal is that once we've sat together on these digital spaces, is for everybody to go back in their individual local community and bring that kind of energy and connection with them. Like, you know, the digital space is a great place to talk to people all over the world, but it really matters when you come back and you start implementing that with your friends and your family, with your church groups, with your activist circles, in the local community. That's where the real change happens, is when we're changing person to person and community to community.
Totally. Well, and one group of individuals that's you know, really struggling right now are young people and teens who are experiencing this very, very, you know, poignant anxiety about the condition of the planet and what climate change means ultimately for their future. So I'm wondering if you have any tips for them or for parents or teachers who, you know, can help them to cope with this anxiety.
Yeah. The single most important thing that we can do is start to build our emotional intelligence. I've said it a few times today, is leaning in to feel our full range of feelings. These kids, they're growing up in a world that looks really scary. If they've read any of the science reports, we know we have less than a decade to really drastically change the ways that we're operating, especially in the Western countries. And so their ideal imagined future is no longer accessible to them. We know we have to have some deep internal transformations. And again, how we deal with this is really facing our fears and our despair, not to get stuck there, not to harp on those feelings, but to open up space and validate that these kids are really scared. You know, they're feeling like they've been betrayed, that their lives, they don't have any control or their agency over their lives. And so we as adults need to start, one, feeling our own feelings so that, you know, when we feel grief or we feel rage ourselves, we're not scared by them. And then we can help these younger people start to face that grief and that rage as well. So that's one tip, is build our emotional intelligence and start communicating about that and being open. Another one is that parents can do their own inner work so they can start trying to undo some of their own traumas. Some theorists talk about climate change as climate trauma because of the tremendous amount of storms and inequality that we're facing. And so we know from trauma work that if we have our own individual traumas, and as adults, I'm going to guess that most of us come with a certain amount of trauma. And if we don't start undoing our own trauma, it's going to be exacerbated by these storms, by these weather impacts that are inevitable because we're living in a climate changed world. So start as adults unpacking your own trauma, leaning into your own feelings so you can model that for the younger generations. And then finally, is help the youth feel some agency. Help them feel like they can contribute some meaningful solutions. You know, it's no longer just about changing light bulbs. The youth can see through that. They're going to say, like, I can only change 10 light bulbs in my house, and climate change still exists. The climate emergency is still here. So help them identify ways that they can be powerful. And what I've noticed is that the youth know more than us adults. I feel like they are really with it, and they're ready to change, and they're ready to do what's necessary to really create a just and sustainable world in the truest sense of the word. And so I think that if we can empower them to feel their feelings, to connect to each other, and to find meaningful work, that they can teach us a thing or two about what we need to do to change and transition and start doing what we need to do to create this truly just and sustainable world.
Absolutely. Well, and it seems like building up their, you know, inner resiliency is going to be really, really essential to that. So I'm wondering if you can share a little bit more about what's next for the Good Grief Network and how you plan to continue to empower individuals and expand this really beautiful community of practice that you've built.
Yeah, I think that everyone should be meeting and talking about feelings, but I'm a little partial. I think that the inner work, it really fuels the kind of outer work that we're doing. And I know in a lot of spaces, activist spaces and advocacy spaces, we talk a lot about the outer work, but I think that's a recipe for burnout. And I think that we need to really tend to these inner pillars of strength that we have and figure out how to calm our bodies when we're responding in our fear responses. We need to know how to connect to other people so that we can become more resilient. And to do that, it's really easy to set up a 10-step program in your location. As I mentioned earlier, you can bring it to like your book club, your church group. You can bring it to any type of meeting or just with friends and family. And so one of the main things that we're doing at Good Grief Network is we're creating an online course that will carry you through a few hours of how to create a container where you can relate with each other and that you're minimizing harm. Whenever you do feelings work, there's always the potential to do a little bit of harm if you're not willing to really lean in and do your internal work. And so we want to teach people how to hold that space in a way that really cultivates different types of emergence and different types of ideas and different resilience strategies. So that's one, is we're going to build this training to help empower people to bring this kind of program into their own communities. The second one is that my wife and I are writing a book about our 10-step process. The book will be out probably late 2022, so it's still a year or so out. But we're very excited to bring this kind of knowledge forward and get more people talking about feelings so that we don't get crushed by them. And then the other thing that we're doing at Good Grief Network is that we're running ongoing 10-step processes. We do this digitally, as we discussed a second ago, and we're launching about one step a month. And so our April group is actually going to be all focused on parenting. So it's for parents, facilitated by parents, and it will hold that space about what it means to be raising young people in a time of climate chaos and disruption, and just holding that space for parents who want to lean in and who want to not project those kinds of feelings and the fear onto their kids. And so we're really excited to be continuously rolling out new 10-step programs. Again, they're about once a month. I think we're going to launch them.
Great. Well, I'm sure many of our listeners can relate, especially to that piece about, you know, trying to parent in the time of climate change and all of these, you know, international disasters with COVID-19. It's a tough time. So I'm wondering where they can go then to learn more, to get involved, or potentially sign up.
Our website is a great place for that. So www.goodgriefnetwork.org. And then we're on all the typical social media channels. So we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and we're on Twitter. And you're welcome to email me. My email address is laura@goodgriefnetwork.org. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone might have about the inner work as needed to facilitate change and keep us sustained for the long haul.
Cool. Well, as always, it's wonderful to chat with you, Laura. I'm wondering, is there anything else that you'd want to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, well, I just am really grateful for the space and this interest in resilience, and grateful for the platform to talk about all different types of resilience and how the inner work matches the outer work and how the inner work can inform the outer work. Because I think that we're in for a time of really trying to be courageous, and we don't want to burn ourselves out while we're trying to make these changes necessary to cut carbon emissions or cut greenhouse gas emissions more generally. And again, if I could emphasize only one point in our talk so far today, and that is just to connect more with people who want to be doing these changes, connect in community and be an activist or an advocate in community, so that if you need to take a break, you're still held up by your community.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Laura, for joining us today and sharing really in this growing community to build resilience and advance equitable and a just approach to climate action here in your home state of Michigan. So we really appreciate your time and all of your work.
Thank you so much, Ashley. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Speaking of Resilience podcast. You can find more episodes of the Speaking of Resilience podcast at our website, groundworkcenter.org/podcast, miclimateaction.org/podcast, or on all major podcast platforms. If you appreciate this content and want more of it, stay up to date by subscribing to the podcast wherever you listen in. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a review. This helps other listeners find the Speaking of Resilience podcast. Like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, at Groundwork Center and at MI Climate Action. Speaking of Resilience is created by the Groundwork Center for Resilient Communities and the Michigan Climate Action Network. This episode was produced by Taylor Kramer of Cold Shower Media in collaboration with Nick Loud of the Boardman Review.